Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
And today it's all about the dogs and service animals that help us get along in life. Especially if you're handicapped, you'll know and you'll understand that a dog may be your connection with society. There may be the dog that helps you, I don't know, get dressed, go to work, that tells you when you're going to have an epileptic seizure, or that helps you around if you're blind. Today we're going to talk to a couple of people that have a lot of experience with service dogs. One of them, actually a couple of them, Jessica Kensky and Patrick Downs. They're married, is that correct?
Yes, they are.
Jessica, unfortunately, became a double amputee after the Boston Marathon bombing. And her husband also became an amputee. They now have a service dog that has helped them. They're going to tell us their story. Also, Stephen Cusita will be joining us. He's blind. He's been blind since birth. And in the 1950s, his mother didn't want him to act blind because she felt that he would not make it in society.
He wouldn't be accepted, so he wasn't supposed to let anybody know he couldn't see.
So for 30-some-odd years, he went through this facade until he met Corky, who became his service animal, and he'll tell us his story today. So that's all on the way. We're talking therapy animals. It's been in the news recently, especially with all the airline headlines.
Yeah, it's been in the news a lot.
Yes.
A lot.
And not in a good way. All the airlines are making new policies about this. So,
well, they have to because people are bringing on fake service animals.
They're just saying they're service dogs, and they're really just transporting their animals one place to another. And you can tell the ones that aren't service dogs. Service dogs are very well-behaved, or they should be well-behaved.
So, well, you know what we're going to talk about in the news coming up?
What?
If you think that you want to have a therapy dog or a service dog, what you as the dog handler and what your dog will have to do, because there are now businesses that are popping up everywhere that because people are needing licenses to take these dogs places and to really legitimize them in many ways. But there are so many things that you have to do. I'm afraid that there are so many pets these days who claim to be therapy pets or service
just
pets
are,
that would never, ever, ever, ever cut it.
Okay, so you're going to tell us what it takes to be a service dog. Coming up in just a few minutes right here on Animal Radio. Let's go to the phones first. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Matt. Who's this?
This is Animal Radio. I got Dr. Debbie right here to my left. Judy's over there. I'm sitting here in a nice tweed shirt, and we're all just waiting for you, buddy.
Okay. Here's the scenario. I board my horses down on a country road at some stables. Now, the woman took Mama Raccoon because it was skinning her calf. Off 20 miles away, just left these three little babies in the wall where I stabled my horse. Mm. So I got them out just to discover that they don't have any teeth yet. Their eyes are barely open. And I had my 13-year-old daughter with me that was going, "Oh, Dad!" So, I got three baby raccoons. We're going to keep them. My wife has got a hold of some website that says they're vicious after 6 months. And they now I understand they steal from you. Anything bright, shiny, car keys, glasses, whatever it may be.
Uh-huh.
But everybody I've talked to up here that has raccoons themselves say, no, that's all a lie. Now, I do understand that I need to get them fixed, and they need to get their rabies shots and distemper shots, but I guess what I'm asking is, is there a place that you know of here in northern Texas that I may take them to so they can have a normal life?
Okay. All right, David. This is going to be a call that you're not going to probably like anything I have to tell you. I'll be very honest. Okay. The honest truth about raccoons as pets is they make pathetic pets. Now, there may be exceptions, but generally, these are wild animals. So even if they're raised generations in captivity, when they hit maturity, generally by 2 years of age, they become aggressive. They get big, and they become destructive. But that's only one part of the equation. The biggest part of the equation that I have is human health. And there are several conditions and diseases that are putting yourself and your children in jeopardy. And as a veterinarian who is trained in zoonotic diseases, diseases that affect people and animals, the raccoon is definitely not a pet I would recommend to have around children. And the reason is many. One is because in the United States, the raccoon is the most common vector or carrier for rabies. And actually, 36% of wildlife cases are because of raccoons. So it is not a critter that I recommend. Now, the reason is because if a human is bitten by, even if you've kept this baby indoors, they've never been outside, you're confident it's never been exposed to rabies. If this raccoon were to bite any human individual, it needs to be put to sleep. And that is one of the big challenges with people who raise raccoons. So in order to raise raccoons, you need to have a wildlife rehabilitation license, and that would be the person I would recommend that you take these babies to. And you can check with your state health and animal control units. They can direct you on that. But there's yet another disease that's even, well, just as terrifying that can affect people that raccoons carry. And they have a type of roundworm called Bacillus ascaris. And they shed massive quantities of this parasite in their feces, thousands of eggs every day, and contaminate environments. And this worm, when it develops into people, it causes severe neurologic disease or death. And the bad thing is that kits that age, so when they're 7, 9 weeks of age or younger, they may test negative for this parasite if we were to check their stool sample. But they may go on later to shed this parasite. So it is a very serious threat for human health. And, that plus rabies, plus the aggression issues, I really don't recommend them as pets. Now, I have treated raccoons. I will tell you there are vets that do. And, yes, they can be spayed and neutered and vaccinated. There are really no vaccines that are recognized in raccoons, so you can give them rabies vaccines, but if they bite someone, like I said, they're pretty much going to have to be destroyed because of the human health issues involved with rabies. That's the hard truth, and I know there are people that have raccoons, and they're a lot of fun when they're little, but it really is a type of critter that I do recommend that you get in the hands of a wildlife rehabilitator so they can raise them, so that they can return to the wild good, healthy, and keep your family safe.
Now, who do I call to find one of these people?
Well, you want to check. You can check. Start with your animal control authorities. That would be one source. If there's a Department of Wildlife in the area, you would check with them.
Yeah, there's one of those.
Yeah, they will be able to direct you to that person. And that's the best thing I could advise for these little guys' sake and for your own.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather have them out in the wild anyways. I mean, I'd hate to be caged up.
Yeah, definitely. And, they are interesting, fun little critters, but they definitely can have their share of trouble when they get older, I will tell you that. So,
yeah, I got a friend with one. He's 2 years old, and half the time he doesn't make it to work because the raccoon took and hit his keys.
Oh, jeez. I don't know how often that the excuse would go over at work, you know.
Yeah, my boss is getting really upset with him, but yeah. I don't know, just have to wait and see.
Yeah, you're going to have to break the news to your daughter, and I'm sure that ain't going to be easy.
You know, kudos for saving the babies. No, kudos. Tell her she did a good thing. The babies were saved, and now they're going to go on to live a happy life in the wild where they should be.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for your call today, David. We appreciate it.
I forget to mention that they're illegal in a lot of states. Oh.
Raccoons are illegal as pets.
In some states, raccoons are illegal as pets, and not only that, you could be fined up to $20,000 if you keep them as pets, so it would be very prudent to check with your wildlife authorities.
Well, don't forget, you can get your fix of Animal Radio anytime you want with the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android. Download it now. It's made possible by Fear-Free Happy Homes, helping your pets live their happiest, healthiest, fullest lives at home, at the vet, and everywhere in between. Visit them at fearfreehappyhomes.com. And thanks, Fear Free, for underwriting Animal Radio.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
it's Alan Cable. You know, dogs are dogs and people are people. I work with two folks this week. Each of them had the same problem. Their dog basically tries to rip their shoulder off at the end of a leash. And the guy I was working with, he let the dog off the leash. What do you think the dog did? Started jumping on him, grabbing the leash with his teeth. Pretty disrespectful behavior, wouldn't you say? You might not, but if that dog were part of a dog pack and did that to the alpha, he'd get a smackdown. Not with words or conversation like people do, but with swift action, a swift correction. A lot of people refuse to accept that their dog's a dog. They pretend the dogs are human. They think he understands everything they're saying, and that he likes everything that humans like. Here's an example. Who doesn't love a hug? I'll tell you who. Most dogs. A hug is threatening to most dogs. They'll put up with it from their human pack members, but when a stranger does it, it signals domination and an invasion of space. It makes a dog feel threatened. We communicate with words. But if you really want to understand your dog, or any dog, you have to watch their body language, their eyes, and what they do when you and other people are around. They learn by observing us. For instance, let's say you had a rug in your kitchen, and the only time you gave your dog a treat is when he was on this rug. You'll notice the dog connects the dots. He figures out that when he's in that place, he gets a treat. So, every time you walk in the room, you'll notice your dog moves to that spot. He even stays in that spot when you're not in the room. This is a cool way to train your dog to do lots of stuff. You're rewarding him for something he's already doing that you like. Then take it a step further. If he's not on the rug, point at it. If he doesn't move, you, while pointing at the rug, start moving towards it. You can use the word treat repeatedly, too. If he's still not moving, get a treat and hold it in your hand while still pointing at the rug and moving towards it. Trust me, your dog's going to get the message, and pretty soon you'll be able to point to get him to go wherever you want him to. People will be fascinated how your dog will do what you want him to without ever saying a word. The greatest thing you can do for your dog is to be a strong pack leader and give him structure. He'll be calm and happy for it.
Hi, this is Judith Chapman from Young and the Restless at CBS, and I'm on Animal Radio right now, and I'm asking everyone out there to please spay and neuter your pets.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discrete sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
Hi, this is Wendy Malick on the Animal Network, and don't forget to spay and neuter.
Animal Radio.
Oh, sorry. Hi, this is Wendy Malick on Animal Radio. And do not forget, spay and neuter.
It is Animal Radio, celebrating the connection with our pets. We would love to hear from you, especially if you have a problem with your animals. I just figured this out. Between Joey and Dr. Debbie and all of us here, we have 602 years of experience.
Wow.
That's actually in dog years.
But I was going to say, dang, we're old.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe we can help you, maybe we can't. But it's worth a try, right? Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Very good. Where are you today?
Today I'm in Cayucos, California.
I know it very well. It's a very, very beautiful place.
Yeah.
So what's going on with you?
Well, I thought I'd call in to talk a little bit about this. Recently I was listening to the show, and you had a gentleman who sounded like he was a long-haul trucker, and he had a black lab that was experiencing some weight problems.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys dug down and found out that he was giving his pooch treats for going to the bathroom and just about any other function that might happen. So I immediately thought of a treat that I was introduced to by the breeders of the last golden retriever that I had. And I learned of this when I went to actually pick up my pup. and they were giving all of the litter and a mom and dad, who happened to still be around, ice cookies.
Ice cookies?
What's an ice cookie?
Yeah.
An ice cookie is a cube of ice.
just a plain, no flavor or anything in it. Just plain ice.
Ice cookies. The dogs went wild for ice cookies, and even they had these, you know, 7-8 week old pups were just clamoring for ice cookies, and it was a crack up. But I thought, man, that is brilliant. And so, Casey, my pup, became a lifelong fan of ice cookies, and what a great way to keep the weight in check and also keep them hydrated. Yeah. And then I suppose, you could even add something to the ice cookies. You could add vitamins, minerals, whatever you wanted to add to them to embellish the treat.
Do you do that? Do you add anything to it?
I never did. I just, when he was hankering for a treat, I'd give him a couple ice cookies and he couldn't be happier.
Have you ever heard of this, Dr. Debbie?
Yeah, and I can't tell you how many dogs, when they hear the sound of an ice maker, will go running to the refrigerator freezer. But, I will have to say there's always a caveat with anything you can feed your pet, and I have to be like the public service message here.
Debbie Downer. Okay.
I'm sorry. I will be Dr. Debbie Downer on this one. So, yeah, it can be fun. You know, the best thing are dogs that, lick and play with the ice cube rather than just maybe, crunching it, chewing it, because large ice cubes, when they chew on it, they can actually crack their teeth. So veterinary dentists will caution you on that. That is just as possible that that can happen with some of the other hard chew items. So, chewers beware that can certainly...
Well, isn't it just as hard as like a chew bone of any sort that you'd get at the store, though? I mean, maybe even less?
Yeah, I mean, to some degree, but anything that's hard enough that when you whack your knee with it, it would hurt. And so do those kind of, the plasticky Nyla bones, some of the rawhide bones have that same heavy density. So it still has that potential. The other thing is the shape. So, if we've got small little ice chips, they're not going to likely be a problem. But if you've got a larger piece of ice, dog teeth are a little bit shaped differently than people. We've got hard occlusal surfaces, so they're not going to quite have the same even forces when they're chewing. So, like I said, I'm just kind of delivering the message. Don't attack the messenger. It is a risk factor that can happen.
I like the idea, though, Greg. And in fact, I'm going to try it later today with Ladybug.
Yeah, I'm just going to get all excited and pretend like I have something really valuable.
That's funny about hearing the ice maker go off and having the dogs go crazy. But it worked for my old guy Casey for many, many years, and I don't recall any dental problems, but that's a good caveat, Debbie. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Greg, for calling and listening on KBEC in San Luis Obispo, California. We're going to head back to the phones for your calls. Well, this portion of Animal Radio is underwritten by Kensington Books. If you love stories about finding strength through the wisdom of dogs, look no further than A Reason for Hope by award-winning author Kristen von Kreisler. It's a beautifully uplifting story about a courthouse dog named Hope, who's trained to comfort victims throughout the legal process. A Reason for Hope is now available everywhere books are sold. And if you need more information, you can visit them over at kensingtonbooks.com. Thanks, Kensington, for underwriting Animal Radio.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hello, this is Jane Goodall on Animal Radio. And I'd just like everybody to realize that each day you live, you make some difference on the planet. And you can choose what kind of difference you're going to make. And hopefully every day you'll try to make the world a little bit better for people, for animals, and for the environment.
Dogs or cats, horse or emu, animals are people too.
A Sacramento couple said they were shocked and confused when their dog received a bill from Verizon Online. Steve Finelli and Sean Donovan said their Lasso Opso named Andy Finelli received a notice in the mail from a collections agency about a bill totaling $142.34. Verizon said the bill was meant for a man named Andy Finelli who lives on the other side of the country. Owner Donovan said, just because there's an Andy Finelli back east doesn't mean you send a letter to Andy Finelli in California. There has to be something else to connect it. AFNI Collections Agency said the confusion may have resulted from the fact that Andy Finelli, the dog, has his own American Express card, which Donovan obtained when it was offered to family members. Donovan said she often takes her girlfriends out to lunch on Andy, the dog. I'm Britt Savage for Animal Radio.
Animals are people too. Animal Radio.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Find us at animalradio.com. Log on, learn more.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discreet sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
Check out Animal Radio Highlights. All the good stuff without the blah, blah, blah. Browse on over to animalradio.pet.
This is an Animal Radio News Update.
I'm Lori Brooks. Every part of the pet care industry is growing these days, and growing so fast, including, did you even know this existed? The mental health portion of pet care. Yes. Now, most of us are aware of, you know, possible pet problems like separation anxiety, and some dogs have compulsive behaviors or phobias and aggression, of course. But as a result of this, many pets are now being prescribed psychiatric medications. In fact, one study published last year found that 8% of dog owners and 6% of cat owners gave medications to their pets for things like anxiety and to calm them for their moods and stuff. But now, if you think about it, because about 60 million American households have dogs, 47 million homes have cats, it is believed that actually millions of American pets are taking medications for behavioral issues. Now, whether pets really need mood-altering drugs is still kind of controversial because it's not known exactly how often these meds are used truly to care for the pet or how often they're simply being given to the dog for the convenience of pet owners. So anyway, there have been some clinical trials that suggest antidepressants indeed may help dogs suffering from separation anxiety and compulsive behaviors like tail chasing. But most of these studies have also included behavioral therapies that are part of the treatments for the animals, not just giving them medication alone. So if you're just giving your dog a medication, you might want to Google it and figure out exactly if there's a companion behavioral therapy for it. Some of these therapies are actually pretty simple, like spending more time with a pet, taking them outdoors and using training programs. Now, here's a heads up. Research tells us that dogs who are walked only a few times each week or other pets whose owners spend less time at home, those pets may be at greater risk for behavioral problems like excessive barking and destructiveness. And lastly, keep in mind that as with humans, giving psych meds to pets can cause side effects. In fact, they're pretty much the same side effects that they cause in humans. Nausea, weight loss or weight gain, and vomiting are pretty common ones.
I got to jump in because, first of all, I want to say that don't give your pets any kind of medications that you have. If you don't self-treat your pets. Make sure your veterinarian knows. But I got to admit that I have a cat that is on Prozac and has been on Prozac for...
10 years?
10 years? Okay.
Yeah, I've been slowly trying to wean him off, though. We've been cutting down. We used to be every day, but now we're down to every third day.
And now, and that may sound crazy, but before he was on this Prozac, he would walk around the perimeters of the house just all uptight, very anxious, and he would pee all over the place. He was just really very uptight. And has changed.
Oh, it's changed. Yeah, you know, you, out of all the other cats, they would lay down and relax, and he would be pacing around the house. He'd pace a room several times, go to the next room, pace around that room, then pee.
And he doesn't exhibit that behavior anymore.
No, it really calmed him down and let him finally relax. We never saw that cat sleeping. He was too busy just, you know, going around the house.
Being tense.
Yeah.
Now, you guys, you brought up something very, very important when you talked about tapering them off the Prozac, because Prozac is an SSRI, a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. So there is the syndrome when you come off it too fast, you can literally go into withdrawals. And so I'm glad to hear that you guys were advised of that.
I did for a whole year. I did it every other day. I went from every day, and then the next year, 1 year I did every other day. Now this year I'm down to every third day, so I'm doing it yearly. I'm taking my time.
Real slow.
Well, I'm glad you guys have you know, that we know that it works for a cat now, because I've never heard of a cat being on Prozac. I've heard of lots of dogs being on it, but and humans. Now, some of those humans who, oh, geez, you know, therapy pets.
Yeah.
We get rather emotional here. Mm-hmm. There was a great article recently, and you pointed it out to me, Hal, and it was fabulous. It was in Parade magazine. It comes in the Sunday newspapers.
Oh, about the therapy dogs.
Yes. And I will highly recommend it to anybody who's thinking about getting, having an emotional support animal, because this will tell you everything that you have to do. And in fact, it's pretty eye opening. You will probably just look at it and go, oh my gosh, my dog could never be a therapy dog. That's why they're. And I don't mean that to discourage anybody, but let me tell you about this. The author mentioned in the very beginning how he saw this cute therapy dog wearing his therapy vest, and he asked the owner if he could pet the dog, like a lot of people do, because, you know, you're not supposed to pet working animals. And the owner told him, look, he's really not a therapy dog. I just put this vest on him so I can take him in the store with me. That doesn't shock you, right?
No, that doesn't. Not in this day and age.
Yeah.
Right, because it happens so much. But now, of course, some airlines are requiring documentation that a therapy animal really is what the pet parent says the therapy animal is or is supposed to be. So what does it take to have a legitimately trained therapy, let's say a dog? They have to be at least 1 year old at the time of evaluation, or only 6 months old if you're trying to get a rabbit, a guinea pig, or a rat certified. They have to have lived with you for at least 6 months. I thought this was funny. Or if it's a therapy bird, it has to have lived with you for 1 year. They want to know that you know these animals.
Okay.
They have to be reliably house-trained, vaccinated against rabies. And you can't say, I got a titer and he's covered. No, titers are not accepted in lieu of a vaccination. The therapy pet, or possible therapy pet, cannot be fed a diet of raw meat, because they could get salmonella, and that could be passed on to humans. They've also got to have a zero history of aggression. They have to demonstrate basic obedience skills. And a dog, say, walking on a lead should walk on a loose leash and then respond predictably to basic commands, such as you say sit, the dog sits and stays there. This was interesting. They must welcome and not just tolerate interacting with strangers. I mean, they have to really enjoy it. I think airlines will be much happier when they see these things. But as the handler, you have to do a lot of things too. You have to be able to cue and redirect that pet without, think about this, you have to be able to tell the dog to sit or come or anything, but you can't raise your voice. You're not allowed to jerk on a leash, and you can't offer food or toys, treats, nothing.
No
so
bribes.
The dog really has to be responsive to you. And for the pet partner's business that is now, you know, in this business, and they have been for a long time, actually. It's why we talk about them. They register 9 different species for therapy animal work. So if it's not just dogs for you, you're a cat lover, Hal.
Yes.
You could definitely.
What about my rat?
Cat certified.
Can I have my rat certified?
They do rats.
Okay.
Horses, rabbits, guinea pigs, llamas, and alpacas, birds, and miniature pigs.
Oh,
but that's a lot of work.
Well, my service llama probably wouldn't pass all of those.
Yeah. Can you imagine going to a restaurant and finding a service llama in there?
I did see a show one time that had a therapy llama. He was really good. In fact, I think they transported him in the back of a van. And he would just lay down, went to hospitals, and they loved him. I mean, he's different, so if it cheers up patients.
Those things can spit.
Right, but they would have to not be, not.
Yeah, spit. If you want your llama to be a service llama, it can't spit. So
right.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't. You know. Good luck with the llamas, guys. Anyway, I'm Lori Brooks. Remember that you can check out breaking animal news anytime at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio news update. Get more at animalradio.com.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Cat hair in my mouth.
It's all over my mic.
It's Animal Radio, celebrating the connection with our pets. We get to take our pets to work. That's one good thing. Joey, whenever he comes in, he's always covered with hair. In fact, you know what? When we go out to lunch or anything like that, I request that he puts a bib on or something, because otherwise hair ends up in our food. What's
that's
that
why
style,
I gave him that
baby.
T-shirt the other day.
Yes, you I know.
Change your shirt, Joey.
Yeah, really? I mean, what am no, I, the brunt of everyone's joke? Yeah.
No, you just, I mean, because you're a groomer, you always have hair on you. And that's just a hazard of your job.
Well, you got to see when we eat lunch in a grooming salon. Do you ever try to eat a tuna sandwich in a grooming salon?
Oh.
You know, you get used to it after a while. It's roughage.
I like having you around, Joey, because you have more pet hair on you than I do on me.
Yes.
And nobody ever does. Yeah.
Lori, what are you working on over there in the newsroom for this hour?
Well, you know, speaking of the Joey problem, pet hair. There was a crime committed recently over pet hair.
Really?
Cat hair specifically. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you all about it in the news.
Yeah, keep busting somebody about pet hair on their shirt and there will be a crime committed.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now. Download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hi, this is Paul Reiser, and you're listening to Animal Radio. Every minute you're here, you're not harming someone else. I don't know what that means. If it's usable, use it. Otherwise, cut it and get out.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discreet sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
This is
Animal Radio, baby.
And let's go to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
Not too bad. Pretty good.
Where are you calling from today?
Right now I'm in Brooksville, Florida.
Florida, okay. And what's going on? I have the entire Dream Team here for you.
Well, I have a domestic short hair. She's about 21 pounds.
Holy cow!
She's always been a healthy cat, and her mother, I say her mother, my wife, she has the open buffet, which is the open food bowl. She just pours the bag of food in, and the cat eats insatiably.
Okay.
Nonstop. I mean, we come home and she hops down off the table and runs to the food bowl. We come out of the back of the bedroom, out of the back of the house, and she hops down off the table and runs to the food bowl.
And she stays indoors, or does she go outside?
Oh, yeah. No, she's an indoor cat.
Okay. So what's prompting you to call? Because you said she's always been big. Is there some change in her health or something that has you concerned?
I'm just curious, is the insatiable appetite, or is it just that the food's there and I'm going to eat it?
Could be a little both.
I know that kind of...
Yeah, so the truth is that for dogs and cats, I mean, just like people, everybody has a kind of a different hunger set point when we feel like we're hungry. Some of that's set up on the type of food we eat. Some of it's genetic. Some of it's based on our activity level. Okay. So for a kitty that is, I'm going to presume that a 20 to 21 pound weight for her is excessive, that she's overweight. So if I had a picture of her and I could see her, you know, for cats that are generally that big, unless they're a Maine Coon, they're generally kind of potato shaped and they got a little head. So if that's kind of what her physique looks like, then she's going to fit into the obese category. And the sad truth is about 35% of U.S. cats are actually obese, overweight or obese.
Wow.
So it is a huge amount. And some of this is we're learning is there's some strategies and changes that we can actually adopt, do different things to help. And I think it's really important to recognize first that cats in the wild, whatever kind of cat it is, a tiger, a domestic cat that's outside, they are actually hunters. So they basically are going to go out, chase their prey, eat it and consume it. That prey is actually very high in protein and fat, but it isn't so high in carbohydrate. And in fact, if you look at what, like, you know, a mouse is made up of, a mouse is like only maybe 1 or 2% carbohydrate. And the reason this is interesting is when we look at dry food, kibble that you pour in the bowl, that is generally around 40% carbohydrate. So the difference is if we know cats are meant to be carnivores, but we pour this kibble in the bowl, that is essentially carbohydrate is energy. And if she's putting on weight, she doesn't need that level of energy. But the unfortunate thing, a lot of these high carbohydrate diets actually, they actually want to keep eating it. So we know that if we switch cats that are having this type of problem to a higher protein and limited carbohydrate diet, it actually kind of resets their hunger level because protein and fat have the benefit of affecting the speed at which the stomach empties. So it makes them feel fuller longer than if they get a lot of carbohydrate. It's kind of like, you know, if I sit down with a bag of chips, you know, I feel satisfied. I love to eat them. I'm going to keep eating them. But, you know, next I'm going to say, okay, where's my dessert now? I want more. Whereas if you eat a good protein meal, you feel a little bit more satisfied for some time. So for cats, we just have to think a little bit differently. So what this means is that if we're thinking about what's the best food for some cats, it may be best to go to a canned food because canned foods are actually much lower in the carbohydrates. There's a lot more moisture in there, which is good for their kidneys as well. So that would be one strategy that we can look at doing.
Now that sounds good, but we've tried every cat treat that's come out, just about. Mm. She won't touch any of them, but she likes chicken. I mean, cooked. Mm-hmm. She cooks it in the microwave because she doesn't want to add anything to it.
Mm-hmm.
And gives it straight up. Gives her chicken, chops it all up, makes it all mushy, and you know, pates it. I guess, but she. Yeah. She's very finicky. If she don't like it, she'll scratch the food bowl all day long.
Okay, all right. We have to dispel something right here. Fat cats are not finicky. They are masters at manipulating. They are not finicky.
Yeah,
she just knows how to ring your bell, man. That's all this is.
That so, sounds like I ring her bell. I'm the one that wants to put the lid on the open buffet at least, you know, 8 hours
yeah,
a day.
Yeah. Well,
something
okay,
that
so
if I understand what you're saying is that if I do something like that, I need to make sure that the protein and the fat content is. See, I'm going to have to look at the food now.
If she's in the category of an obese cat, this is really something that I would suggest some veterinary direction for a couple reasons. One is that to help you pick the right food. And there are some great different strategies that we can go with diet, whether you do a dry food or a canned food, because there are some other even dry foods that are high in protein, lower in carbohydrates. And in fact, we use them all the time with diabetic cats and they're very successful, sometimes putting diabetic cats in remission. So that's one thing. There's also a really wonderful weight loss food that I use from Hill. well, is called metabolic diet, and I really love it. I've had some cats lose a tremendous amount of weight on that. So that's another thing your veterinarian may help you with. But the other reason that it's so important not to try to handle this yourself and to change foods and be real strict is because cats, if we kind of pull the rug under them and they stop eating, they can actually go into a type of a liver condition called hepatic lipidosis. So meaning if they don't eat for a couple days, that liver tries to kind of mobilize a new energy pathway, and it can actually cause some very serious liver failure. So I would want you to work with your veterinarian on this.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discrete sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
Yeah, I like talking to celebrities here on the show, and I love talking to the experts. But I got to say, my favorite part of the show is talking to you from the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android, because we want to talk to you live, and we're going to go to the phones in just a couple of seconds here. Lori, what are you working on over there in the newsroom?
You're not going to believe this story.
Okay.
There's a group of people who literally hijacked a dog park.
Hijacked what? A dog park?
Yes. It was a public city dog park, and people came along and hijacked, pirated, stole the dog park. And for like 10 years, it was under the radar. Nobody even knew. Ooh. The city didn't even know. But I'll tell you how they did that and how the city hopes to get it back.
Hey, Paul, how are you?
Well, I've got two quick questions. And then what I believe was at least a semi-miracle that I think was a wonderful thing that happened. My first question is there such a thing as any spray like an anti-catnip that will keep Tomcat, my tiger that I have here, from continuing to put air ventilation holes in my sofas and my curtain.
What, you don't like those holes?
No, I really don't want those holes.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, Paul, there are certainly sprays that are made, but for what your purpose of keeping your kitty away from, I'll be honest, I think your chance of having a spray deter your cat from scratching on furniture is going to be very unlikely for a couple reasons. Most of the deterrent sprays, you know, are based off of something that's aversive to a cat, you know, whether it's got lemon or orange peel extract or even capsaicin, which is the kind of one of the ingredients in like a Tabasco. Those kind of things can be a deterrent, but most cats feel such a thrill, and there's so much more of a motivator to do scratching behavior. It's partly a marking behavior, and it's partly just fun. So it's going to be hard to really overcome that. There are other tools that I do recommend to help you with dealing with scratching problems. Some of them are physical things, and others are just kind of strategizing your household and how to make some changes. One of the things can be a short-term aid are using the nail caps that you actually trim the nail, put the little glue and the cap on the nail, and it helps to protect your furniture while you're trying to work on some of the training behaviors. But the deterrence to keep a kitty away from furniture that I find the most luck is shutting doors, number one. Decrease the access just in the most simple way you can. So if it's an area that you're trying to preserve your kitty not to get to, a door closing can be a great thing. But other things like upside down plastic carpet runners can be a deterrent that you can put that on, either on the furniture or right immediately where they're kind of stepping and treading and kind of stretching onto the furniture. It just feels a little unpleasant. It doesn't really hurt them. It's just kind of a way to keep them away. And then there's, you know, the scat mats, which are the little static mats, which also can be used on counters or furniture to deter kitties from, you know, going in those locations. And then I think the other thing a lot of us use are the upside, the double-sided sticky tape, you know, putting those in the places that are the high repeat areas where your kitty might be scratching. Those, I think, you'll have better success. And then, of course, you know, offering that alternative site, which is really attractive, whether your kitty likes corrugated cardboard surfaces, you know, the carpeted kitty posts with a little catnip in the area to entice them to that, whatever it may take. But those would be my recommendations before I'd say, you know, a spray is going to do the job.
Okay, that helps on that. Talking to a couple other cat owners, and including my son, who when he married his bride, she said, "If you love me, you must love my cats." And because he had an allergy, but he persevered. And now, if I may, I'd like to, as quickly as I can, share with you the miracle with our goldfish.
Okay.
a few years ago. My son was going camping for the weekend, and he was a high school student, and he had a fairly long-lived goldfish in one of those small, little, round goldfish bowls. And he asked his younger sister, Amy, who now is a physical therapist and does very well, but back then she took the food container and spilled so much that it just a layer of fish food on the water, which cut down on the oxygen. And she came crying to me, screaming and tearful, and said, "Daddy, I've killed Jason's fish. Can you do something? You listened to that pet show," and it was one that was on a Philadelphia station on Saturday mornings years ago. And I said, "Oh my goodness, to call a veterinarian and ask about a goldfish, I'm probably going to not be able to get anything done." But my daughter was in great emotional pain, so I said, "Yes, I'll do that." So I called up, and sure enough, the screener said, you want a goldfish that stopped swimming to be revived?" And I said, "Yes, I do. My 12-year-old daughter is quite upset, and I just need to find out if there's anything we can do for the fish, because I can't really take it to a vet. It would be too long." And so, okay, I'll put you on hold, and the vet will talk to you. So I had scooped out the excess, all as much of the cat food, fish food as I could, so it cleared off the surface. And it was a fairly long hold of about 15 minutes until I got to the vet on the radio. And while that was happening, I put my finger by the tail fins, and I began to push the goldfish around in a circle inside its small glass container. Just kept pushing it and pushing it gently and slowly. And just before the vet was able to get to me, I began to realize, hey, the fish is wiggling and moving. And indeed, it was swimming. So I told the vet that, she said, "Yeah, I don't know what I can really tell you over the phone for a goldfish that's died." But I said, "Well, you don't have to worry about that, because I've given it artificial gill respiration." and it just is, I guess if a goldfish could smile, it would have done that. But my daughter Amy's face was smiling as much as an August sun at noon, I'm telling you. So I just thought that was a miracle, and I do recommend it to anyone whose son or daughter pours too much food in there. And the fish lived happily for quite a while after that.
Well, and you know what I have to say, you know, that does make sense, you know, but actually, you know, some of what you did actually before you even tried to touch the fish sounds like it really could have helped quite a bit, because when you have all those buildups of, you know, the food and the waste in there, there's a lot of, you know, waste products built up in their water. So that's kind of what he's breathing. You know, once that gets rectified and cleaned up, that's part of a water change, and cleaning out a tank after an overfeeding is part of how we treat it. So, you know, even just that process was certainly helpful. Yeah. And this was a goldfish, right?
A goldfish, and it was only like about maybe 2 inches long at that time.
Well, we see a lot of goldfish with what we call buoyancy disorders. So, you know, they either are what we call floaters or sinkers. So, you know, they have these little swim bladders that help them, you know, go up and down and, you know, regulate their buoyancy in the water. And sometimes that'll cause them to float in a weird pattern on the top of the tank. And other times they'll cause them to sink. And, you know, about over three quarters of the time something like that happens, there's really something medically going on, some kind of problem, whether it's infection. A growth, kidney problems, reproductive issues. But there's all sorts of different remedies we can do for that. So I would encourage you or other listeners, if you do have a goldfish with this kind of problem, don't flush. You could actually have something done for your goldfish.
You know, I know human doctors have so much to learn, pharmacology and anatomy and all the various diseases, and there's new ones coming in. But you vets deal with many different species, from goldfish up to horses or whatever, and they can't talk to you. So I just think that's an amazing thing. I had a roommate who was studying to be a veterinarian, and I found out that the course of study is actually more rigorous than it is for a human doctor. So I think you vets are amazing.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you so much
You're
for
welcome.
Calling, Paul. I appreciate all your great questions today. Those were really great. And your life-saving ability. So congratulations on that.
Okay. That'll give me an extra halo maybe when I pass on.
We could use all the halos we can get. Thank you for your call, Paul. Really, you see goldfish in your office? People bring goldfish in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had goldfish that have had tumors removed. And, so there's a whole plethora of things that people will bring their fish for. It's just not quite as common. You know, we see far more dogs and cats, so... one of my first pets was a goldfish named Murgatroyd, and he was like a rescue from a fair, you know, that game where you play a ping pong ball. I was, you know, I won him, and my mother was like, we have no fish tank. What are you doing? So that kind of started things off. So Murgatroyd was with me for many years, which is unusual. You don't usually get those little fancy feeder goldfish to last that long, but started my love of pets.
I saw a picture, I don't know if it was true, of a goldfish. I guess maybe it was one of the ones that was a sinker, and they had tied like a little balloon to it or something just to keep it floating and upright. Is that true?
That's one of the therapies. They're actually, they call it a buoyancy vest. So it's one of the ways to help them to kind of, because some of the causes of buoyancy problems can be something we might need to continue to treat, like an infection. So those aren't going to rectify right away. So you need to be able to have the fish be able to function and to move around. So that helps them to kind of not beat themselves up on the bottom of the tank, or sometimes being upright upside down will cause their scales to dry out, and they can have areas, you know, be harmed from being out of water when it shouldn't be. So, yeah, that's kind of a cool thing. You actually can see a buoyancy vest.
You are the fish fairy today.
She is the fish fairy. She is so multi-talented.
I love it.
If you want to talk to Dr. Debbie right now, it's toll-free. Questions about pretty much all of your animals, except that husband of yours. Yeah, she can't answer questions about that, so don't call about him, okay?
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett Michaels, and I just want to say, you, right now, want to take... Wait, give me the line again. My brain skipped.
Brett Michaels...
I just had one of my brain hemorrhage brain farts.
Oh, don't do that. Don't do that. I don't want to be responsible for that.
Trust me, it's me. Go ahead.
Animal Radio. Brett Michaels, Animal Radio.
You got it. I knew the Animal Radio. Like, okay, here we go. Hey, this is Brett Michaels. You're listening to Animal Radio, and take care of your pets. They will rock your world.
Award-winning author Kristen von Kreisler is known for her novels about dogs and how they bring out the best in humans. Her newest, A Reason for Hope, is an uplifting story of resilience, redemption, and a special yellow lab named Hope, a courthouse dog who's trained to comfort victims and witnesses. When a woman's life is upended by trauma, Hope gives her the courage to seek justice. A Reason for Hope by Kristen von Kreisler is available everywhere books are sold. For more info, visit KensingtonBooks.com.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It is Animal Radio, celebrating the connection with our pets. If this is your first time listening, welcome. To my left is Judy. She's screening your calls. To my right in the newsroom, Miss Lori Brooks. Joey Volani is here answering your grooming questions. And Dr. Debbie's also here answering your pet
medical questions. Anything. We're ready for behavior, medicine, or just that second opinion you might want because you got that itching question in your head.
Yeah. A free second opinion. Where else can you get that? I don't know. I sort of sit around and criticize people all day. I'll give you a second opinion.
For a skinny girl, Dr. Debbie, though, is pretty well-rounded.
She is. She really is.
For a skinny girl.
And, boy, that threw me off. Oh, Dr. Debbie, she has some great books, too. If you happen to have a Yorkshire Terrier, a Shih Tzu, a Pug, or a Mini Schnauzer, she has written these Kindle books. They're like how-to guides, manuals. You should have these books if you have one of these breeds. And they're easy to read, Kindle books over at Amazon.com. And, of course, you can
go online and download them.
You can download them.
For just a second, I forgot where I was. And I looked around and I saw all the animals. And then it hit me. Here I am at Animal Radio. Hey, time for Dueling Debbie's. Hey, Debbie, how are you doing?
In my neighborhood, we have a huge, huge stray cat problem. And I was wondering if there's anything that can be done to keep them out of flower beds. And they just dig them up, sleep in them, use them as litter boxes.
Yeah, yeah. And that is definitely, I'll tell you, there are some solutions. All of these will be helpful in certain situations, and you might have variable success with them. And as long as there's those stray cats out there kind of hanging out, they are definitely drawn to soil. You know, it's what they do. It's what they nest in. It's what they cover their excrement in. So it is a natural instinct. So that being said, for those who don't want the cats in their garden, we can try some physical things to keep them away and make it less attractive. And there's some other things that we can do. There are some products out on the market that are granules that help to keep the critters out of certain areas. And I can't say I have a lot of success with those. I am a fan of the physical deterrents, things that don't hurt the cat, but make it unpleasant for them to tread in those areas. And one of the great things you can try, and in a garden it'll have a dual benefit, is the motion-activated sprinkler system. Or there's even one that has a compressed air. So when the electronic eye is set off, when the cat or the animal treads in that area, a sprinkler will go and kind of spook them away. So a very kind, gentle way to just get them out of the area. That, and you may even combine that with, if it's appropriate in your garden setting, is to take chicken wire or really close mesh wire and lay that down in the bed of the garden. And they don't like to step on it. It obviously can only be used in certain areas, but if that's appropriate for some of the bulk areas of your garden, it can be a wonderful deterrent to keep them away from there. No, they will avoid the area. So cats, if they wanted to, they could walk on it. It just feels uncomfortable. It's kind of like walking on, waffle wire. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't cut them. I'm talking barbed wire. We're not talking anything like that. This is just chicken wire or some of that rabbit fencing, if you will, that'll help to keep bunnies out. So that's something. But you lay it down because don't just stand it up. They'll just jump right over it otherwise. And then I do have some luck with using citrus products. Just citrus is unpleasant to cats. They don't really like it. They don't want to be around it. So, if you can put some orange peels, lemon peels, and kind of sprinkle that on the perimeter of your garden, it's kind of a natural deterrent that, that might help to keep the kitties away. And then as far as, I know I've mentioned this before, for folks who are having trouble with cats coming near their house, some of the back door situations, is that you can actually go to a hunting store and pick up coyote urine. And if you can tolerate the smell of it near your garden, you can treat the area around. And that can help just by signaling that a predator is nearby, and it can deter cats from kind of going in the area. So there's a lot of solutions there you can try, see what works for you. Certainly is better than clapping your hands and yelling, "Hey, get out of my garden."
Yeah, I wish there was something we could, they're starving, but last summer, I made the mistake of feeding a couple, and I'd come home, there was 20 on my porch. So,
yeah.
I had something to do to stop it, but
Yeah, and that is definitely one thing that you've hit upon, that as long as you offer food sources, those cats are going to be coming around. So you really have to cut that off in your area if you want them to stay away. You're not going to have any luck if you keep feeding them.
Okay, well, I'll try some of those.
Good luck with that, Debbie.
Good luck.
All right, thanks.
That's always a tough problem there. But, yeah, don't feed them. Oh, my God. That's going to bring them around in a second.
Feed them in your neighbor's yard.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It's Alan Cable with real dogs doing amazing things. This one only weighs 10 pounds.
Me and my little sister were making mud pies, and I hear a hiss and a rattle, and I look down, and there's a snake.
These two kids were inches away from a venomous rattlesnake.
He was already, like, curled up.
He was coiled and ready to strike, and he tried to, but his bite missed its mark.
Tycho, he got in front of me, and the snake bit him.
This little 10-pound dog took a rattlesnake bite in his right eye.
I mean, he saved her life.
This family is so thankful. All they can do now is wait for the swelling to go down to see if the dog's eye will be okay. Another amazing story out of Baltimore when police were called about a vicious pit bull. Folks said he was terrorizing the neighborhood. The officer who responded is a dog lover, and he followed the pit bull into an alley. All the dog wanted to do was lick him. The officer got into the back of the patrol car with the dog, and they drove him to the shelter, but when they got there, he couldn't turn the dog in. He brought the dog home to his other two dogs, and they all seemed to be getting along just fine.
This is
Animal Radio.
All of us here at Fido Friendly Magazine can't wait to get on the road again with our favorite Fido. We know that it's just not a vacation without our furry companions by our side. Start daydreaming now and visit FidoFriendly.com to scout out places near and far so you will be ready for your next adventure once it's safe to travel. That's FidoFriendly.com. Until then, stay safe and leave no dog behind.
This is an Animal Radio News Update.
I'm Lori Brooks. I have this startling story for you I ran across this week. Recreational drugs, alcohol, absolutely not for pets or children, right? I mean, don't we all think that way? Well, the Family Center for Recovery surveyed over 1,000 pet parents. And while cats are, of course, known for their curiosity, this survey revealed that it is dogs who get into the most trouble. They had 807 dog owners in this survey confessing to seeing their dog consume drugs or alcohol. But it was only just about 275 for cats. But the survey found that alcohol is definitely the substance that is accidentally consumed by most pets.
Accidentally.
Yeah, that's what I thought was interesting. But 28% of these pet parents admitted to watching their pets consume alcohol. And I can see people just watching it and thinking that's funny. And then some going as far to say they actually gave the alcohol to their pet on purpose. There's about, in this survey, 1 in 4 that confessed that they thought eating marijuana or inhaling it was safe for their pets. So, like alcohol, you got to be careful because marijuana can cause serious health issues for your pet. In fact, most veterinarians' offices will tell you they are seeing an incredibly alarming number that is just going up and up and up of pets that have come in high on their owner's recreational drug of choice. So, but aside from alcohol and marijuana, over-the-counter medication was absolutely the most frequent drug consumed by pets. And that's, you know, we've all done this usually because somebody left the medicine in a place that they thought was, you know, out of reach for the pet, but it wasn't. And then finally, this is truly shocking. Almost 10% of men and 5% of women in this survey said they purposefully got high with their pet on drugs so that they could share the experience with them.
Jeez.
Like, wow.
Now, is it,
dude,
are we just out of that generation or culture?
I don't get it.
So, yeah.
But now, even stranger, nearly 8% of men and 4% of women said they gave their pet drugs or alcohol out of boredom.
They shouldn't have animals.
They need to get a job.
Yeah. Take those animals away.
So, but you know, this was done by what was it, the Family Center for Recovery?
Oh, okay. Well, that explains a lot.
Makes a little more sense since I repeated that, yes, huh? Okay. From our hard to believe file, the Tribeca Dog Park in New York, it's an area of New York City, was literally stolen, pirated, hijacked, whatever you want to call it, 10 years ago by some residents who put a lock on the gate of the dog park, and then they began charging fees, banning non-members and their dogs, and enforcing. They had a list of 22 rules, and they said they ruled this with an iron fist. But the thing is, the city never noticed that this happened.
Jeez.
Isn't that amazing? The people who pirated this dog park, their group, they installed a keypad lock on the gate. Then they sent the members a secret four-digit passcode after they paid their $120 yearly fee. And then they changed the code every few months. And then they would email the new code. But
wow.
Now the Parks Department is trying to reclaim that dog park for the public for which it was intended. But the members-only group who stole it says the city was neglectful and forced their hand. And that group says it is going to fight the city all the way. How can they keep a dog park? I think we should go out right now and we could take a part of the 405.
Yeah, there you go.
Or
put up a gate there. You can't pass
right
down the 405 and
yeah, unless you pay a toll.
That's so weird. That's so bizarre. Does the city have control of it yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
Because they're like renegades. They are truly fighting to keep this dog park. They think that the city did a terrible job. They want to keep it as their own. It's almost like militant. But I'll keep you posted. Now, this guy does not sound like he's one of us guys. He's not a pet lover. A 58-year-old man in Florida has been arrested after he shot at, didn't put the bullet through him. He shot at his roommate because he was angry about cat hair being on their couch. The roommate luckily called police and told them that the cat hair hating guy fired the gun towards him and said, "The next time it's going to be you." So Mr. Cat Hair Hater is now being held without bond and is facing charges of shooting into a dwelling, aggravated battery, and aggravated assault. And he deserves it, doesn't he?
Guy would hate my house.
Yeah, but they don't sound like very good roommates. They shouldn't be rooming together.
I was thinking about Joey and all of his pet hair on the shirt. The guy would freak. Don't go there, okay?
Yeah.
I'm Lori Brooks. Get more breaking animal news anytime you need it. It's always there at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio News Update. Get more at animalradio.com.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Found us. It's Animal Radio. We're going to visit with Steve Cusisto. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm great. How are you guys?
Very good. So let's tell listeners a little bit about your background. You were born legally blind. Is that correct?
Correct.
So could you see anything? Shadows? Lights? Anything?
If I put my nose on something, I can see what it is with okay. one eye.
And that was in the 50s.
Correct.
So it was probably treated a little differently. Did you, I understand that you didn't want people to know that you were blind.
Well, my mother really felt that if people really fully understood how blind I was, I would have no place in society.
Oh,
that was
wow.
her rural New England uninformed mode of thinking. And that pretty well colored the way she thought about disability. And so it's not an unusual story. Even today, there are people with disabilities who, don't get the kind of emotional support they need, and they grow up not embracing it.
I understand that you actually, as a blind person, you rode a bike around?
Yeah, I rode a bike around, and then later I rode a motorbike. Yes.
Blind.
And the truth is, that's not an uncommon story. Lots of blind people have stories like that. I don't want to make myself out to be like a really singular person for this. I mean, it's a fairly common story, actually.
Okay, so how old were you before you got your first service dog?
Well, I didn't get corky until I was 38.
So for 38 years, you tried to pass off as being a sighted person.
Yes, although not very successfully. And then I decide, right, in my 30s, wow, you know what? Not only am I learning how to walk with a white cane and be a blind guy in the world, but I like dogs a lot.
So did the way your mother raised you, did it help you or hinder you, do you think, in the long run?
Oh, it did both. It made me incredibly adventurous, a thing I still am. And so, you know, willing to do daredevil things. Certainly, you know, I'm not a worrier about being in the world. That may have aided me when I trained with a guide dog because, of course, you know, one of the things that you do is learn how to work the dog in urban environments. And I was in New York City with my first dog, Corky, who was mentioned in the book. And I'm plunging through New York traffic and having a hell of a good time, learning to trust her and discovering that I can go any place I want. So that's the upside of it. The downside of that kind of denial is that it takes you a long time to just decide, hey, I'm okay this way. Well, and that's not an unusual story either, right? Lots of people, whether they're gay or they're, you know, they grew up with alcoholics or whatever it is, it takes them a while to finally figure out, wow, I'm good.
Yeah. But, you know, we're all about animals here because it's Animal Radio, right, Steve? And I love when you said, and hey, I discovered I really like dogs. What did you really love at first about guide dogs, and what do you love even more now?
Well, you know, I grew up in a family. We always had golden retrievers, and they were wonderful dogs and great companions and fun to have around. And they'd lift your spirits no matter the day. And, you know, they were playful and just loyal, terrific companions. So certainly I'd grown up knowing that dogs were just absolutely fabulous creatures. But one day I almost got run over in Ithaca, New York, where I was then living, a college town. I was using a white cane to navigate, which is one way that the blind can navigate. But the thing about the cane is it can't warn you if you step into the street and you haven't heard the traffic correctly, right? And so I was almost struck by a Chevrolet, and I'm sitting on the sidewalk with a stranger who helped me, and I'm tasting my heart in my mouth, and it dawns on me that I had read somewhere that guide dogs are trained in this remarkable thing called intelligent disobedience, that they will not let you step into harm's way. And that's, of course, because dogs are smart. And, you know, guide dogs are the dogs that are selected not because they're obedient, but because they can think for themselves, right? They're independent. And I just thought, holy cow, you know what? It's like the light bulb moment where the Elmer Fudd light bulb goes off over his head, right? You know, in the cartoon. I just suddenly realized, oh, yeah, a guide dog.
We got to take a quick break. We are with Steven Cusisto. We're going to talk about what it's like to train with a dog and his book coming up next. Stick around.
Check out Animal Radio highlights, all the good stuff without the blah, blah, blah. Browse on over to animalradio.pet.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discreet sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
Oh, what did he say?
He said, we're all across the USA, the most listened to pet show today. Animal Radio, we're everywhere you go. Animal Radio. Animal Radio.
It's Animal Radio, celebrating the connection with our pets and our guide dogs. And we're with Steven Cusisto, blind since birth, but has made great friends with several guide dogs. What's it like training with a guide dog?
You know, when you're actually training with the dog, you very quickly come to realize that this is an exceptionally smart animal and that it has your back. It has your best interests in mind. And, of course, your job is to also have her best interests in mind, and you become a six-legged creature. You really do. You become a really deeply bonded team.
Tell us about Corky.
Well, Corky lived to be 13. She was my first guide dog. She came from Guiding Eyes for the Blind, which is one of a dozen great guide dog schools in the U.S. She was a very large yellow Labrador, I'd say, for a female Labrador, really big. I'd say she was 85 pounds. She was extremely fast. Part of the joke was that they couldn't find somebody fast enough to give her to. They'd had her a little while at the guide dog school. And I am fast, and I came along, and they just took one look at me and went, "Eureka, we have found Corky's match." And to this day, I'm still that way. I'm very speedy. I run. And so my current guide dog, who is my fourth, also from the same school, also a yellow Labrador, her name is Caitlin. She is also extremely fast. They've all been speedy. And my sighted friends can't keep up with me. They're like, "Okay, we'll see you at the next block," you know.
So you've had four. Did they live their life with you, or what?
Oh, yeah.
Seems like four is a lot.
When they retire, typically they work roughly seven years on average,
okay.
Right? They're two when you get them, and they work until they're like, say, nine.
Oh.
And, you know, I did have a second guide dog named Vidal who worked till he was 10. But typically they retire. They slow down a little bit, right, just like the rest of us.
Okay.
In dog years, they're a little older. And in my case, I kept all of them as family pets and got a new guide dog. And that, you know, is pretty customary. If you're a blind person who doesn't have the kind of family dynamic and home where you can do that, you can return the dog and the guide dog school will find a home for it, or you can give it to a family friend or, you know, neighbor or what have you. But absolutely, I've kept all of mine, and because after all, they're part of the family.
Sure, absolutely. Well, let's get to the book now. Have Dog, Will Travel, A Poet's Journey. What is that about?
Well, you know, I joked with Simon & Schuster, who published it. I said at one point, it's really Zen and the Art of Guide Dog Travel. You know, like that old Robert Pirsig book from the 60s, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. I mean, it's not about motorcycles, and in a way, it's about guide dogs, but it's also about learning to love your life, learning to admire and appreciate the wisdom of dogs, learning to discovering that you can go anywhere you want, anytime you want with a guide dog. There's a section in the book where after I get Corky, I go to New York City with her just on a lark, right, on a whim. And we spend 3 days just going everywhere in New York just because we can. You know, I go to a Mets game. I go to Coney Island. You know, I go to a jazz club, right? And I write about how formerly in my life I hadn't felt that I had that kind of independence and freedom. And so pretty quickly I discover, right, with Corky that she's making me a bigger, more open, more flexible, more curious, and more secure person. And so in a way, the book becomes about developing a kind of spiritual life, a more trusting, outgoing, and even lovely life. And so that's why it's called A Poet's Journey, not just because I began my writing career as a poet, but because it's a poet's eye on what makes a dog a thrilling and wonderful companion, really for anybody, right? This is not a book just about disability. It's for anybody who loves dogs.
I think you're a little modest, Steve, because I only had time to read a couple of pages since I just got the book last night. But you describing what it's like to maneuver traffic and people in a congested city and cars and crossing streets, I told a friend of mine that it was like an e-ticket ride after I had just read two pages. It was amazing.
Oh, I'm so glad. Yeah, thank you for saying that, because that's what I was trying to accomplish, that you're... The opening, right, I say, what's it like? And then I take people through a tour of Milan, Italy at night, attached to Corky. And that's what I was trying to accomplish, is like, here's a virtual experience.
I would have never expected that, you know. And so I was so excited to hear that we were interviewing you today, because that it was just riveting. I would have never known that there were 8 million things that you could teach another human about feeling what guide dogs do. It was a big emotional ride. I loved it. Really.
Oh,
thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That means a lot.
I'd love to share this book with you. Right now, I have 10 copies to give out to lucky listeners. If you're not lucky enough to get on through, head on over to Amazon or your bookstore and ask for Have Dog Will Travel, A Poet's Journey. Steve Cusisto joining us and the author of that. Of course, we'll put links to everything you've heard on today's show over at animalradio.com. Thank you, Steve, for telling us your story. It's so heartwarming.
Hey, listen, you just need to know, I am already a listener to Animal Radio, so this is a thrill for me.
Great. I don't know about you, I had a lot of fun today, and I learned a lot about therapy animals and service animals.
And Dr. Debbie's goldfish thing.
She is incredible, I'll tell you.
The fish fairy.
We bow to the fish fairy. Hey, if you need your fix during the week, visit us over at animalradio.pet or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And we'll see you next week for more Animal Radio right here. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, come on. Say it in fish. You are good, Dr. Debbie.
This is Animal Radio Network.